O Lord, being one without a second, you are everything. Eva, indeed. Asya Sataha, of this cosmic manifestation now visible. Prasutihi, the original source. Swam, your lordship. Sanidhanam, the conservation of all such energy. When everything is annihilated. Twam, your lordship. Anugrahacha, and the maintainer. Twatmaya, by your illusory external energy. Samrita Chetasaha, by those whose intelligence is covered by such illusory energy. Twam, unto you. Pachanti, observe. Nana, many varieties. Na, not. Vipaschitaha, learned scholars or devotees. Yay, who are. Translation, the efficient cause of this material world manifested with its many varieties as the original tree is you, O Lord. You are also the maintainer of this material world. And after annihilation, you are the one in whom everything is conserved. Those who are covered by your external energy cannot see you behind this manifestation, but theirs is not the vision of learned devotees. You can repeat. The efficient cause of this material world, manifested with its many varieties, as the original tree, is you, O Lord. You are also the maintainer of this material world. And after annihilation, you are the one in whom everything is conserved. Those who are covered by your external energy cannot see you behind this manifestation. But theirs is not the vision of learned devotees. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Various demigods, beginning from Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and even Vishnu, are supposed to be the creator, maintainer, and annihilator of this material world, but actually they are not. The fact is that everything is the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifested in varieties of energy, ekam evaditiyam brahma. There's no second existence. Those who are truly vipaschit, learned, are those who have reached the platform of understanding and observing the Supreme Personality of Godhead in any condition of life. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena santatsadaiva riyeshu vilokiyanti. Rama Sanghita, 5th chapter, text 38. Learned devotees accept even conditions of distress as representing the presence of the Supreme Lord. When a devotee is in distress, he sees that the Lord has appeared as distress, just to relieve or purify the devotee from the contamination of the material world. While one is within this material world, one is in various conditions, and therefore the devotee sees a condition of distress as but another feature of the Lord. Tatte nu kampam su samikshavana. Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 14th chapter, text 8. A devotee therefore regards distress as a great favor of the Lord, because he understands that he is being cleansed of contamination. Tesham aham samudarta mrityu samsara sagarat. Bhagavad Gita, 12th chapter, text 7. The appearance of distress is a negative process intended to give the devotee relief from this material world, which is called mrityu samsara, or the constant repetition of birth and death. To save a surrendered soul from repeated birth and death, the Lord purifies him of contamination by offering him a little distress. This cannot be understood by a non-devotee, but a devotee can see this because he is vipaschit, or learned. A non-devotee, therefore, is perturbed and distressed, but a devotee welcomes distress as another feature of the Lord. Sarvam kal vidam brahma. A devotee can actually see that there is only the Supreme Personality of Godhead and no second entity. Ekam eva ditya. There is only the Lord who presents himself in different energies. Persons who are not in real knowledge think that Brahma is the creator, Vishnu the maintainer, and Shiva the annihilator, and that the different demigods are intended to fulfill diverse purposes. Thus, they create diverse purposes and worship various demigods to have these purposes fulfilled. Kamaistastar ritagyana purpajantanya devataha. A devotee, however, knows that these various demigods are but different parts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and these parts need not be worshipped. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, 9th chapter, text 23. Yepyanya devata bhakta yashante shudayan vitaha te bhimam eva konteha yashantya vedi purvakam. Whatever a man may sacrifice to other gods, O son of Kunti, is really meant for me alone, but it is offered without true understanding. There is no need to worship the demigods, for this is avidhi, not in order. Simply by surrendering oneself at the lotus feet of Krishna, one can completely discharge one's duties. There is no need to worship various deities or demigods. These various divinities are observed by the mudhas, fools, who are bewildered by the three modes of material nature, Tribir, Gunamaya, Bhavar, Avi, Sarvam, Idam, Jagat. Such fools cannot understand that the real source of everything is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mohitam, Nabijana, Timam, Avya, Padama, Avyam. Not being disturbed by the Lord's various features, one should concentrate upon and worship the Supreme Lord, Mamekam Sharanam Braja. This should be the guiding principle of one's life. Satvameka evasya sata prasutis tvam sanidhanam tvam anugrahascha tvam maya samrita chetasas tvam Shanti Nana Navi Paschito Yay. So Omagana Timidandasha Gananjana Shadakaya Chakshur Unmerita Yena Tesmai Shigurve Namaha. So there's a lot of very important statements here in this verse and purport. So we're going to touch upon a few of them. So the beginning of the translation starts, the efficient cause of this material world. So let's describe what that means, efficient cause of the material world. There are actually two causes. There's the material cause, and there's the efficient cause. So the material cause, actually both of these are coming from Krishna. Where in this purport, Prabhupada described everything as Krishna. Everything is Krishna and not Krishna simultaneously, inconceivably, achintya, veda, veda, tattva. That's our philosophy. That in one sense everything is Krishna because it's Krishna's energy, But in another sense, it's different than Krishna. That's important to understand. Anyway, so there's a difference between the efficient cause and the material cause of this creation. Material cause is basically the inert ingredients, which are sometimes called, before the time of the cosmic creation, sometimes called the pradana. Pradana means, we were corresponding with someone yesterday about it, giving an example. Pradana means something like the clay that one has or a child has within a container before the child takes the clay out of the container and gives it shape. It's just the raw materials. You got it? Raw materials. And then after the child takes out the clay from the container, just like when we were young, we had this clay dough, and also another thing called silly putty. And after you take it out and you give it shape, that's the manifestation, or metaphorically, it's the same as the manifestation of the material world. So, the pradana is the material cause, which comes from Krishna also. And then the efficient cause, that means which causes it to take shape and act, is the Supreme Lord. But the way the Supreme Lord manifests this efficient cause of the material world is through his glance, as described in Sanskrit as Shaikshita. In other words, he glances at the material creation. Now, the interesting thing is, he never touches the material creation. Of course, we find in the Brahma Samhita the interesting verse, Angani Yasha Sakalendriya Dri Timanti, that the Lord can do anything with any one of his senses. And in this particular case, the Lord is impregnating with his sense of sight. And so that's how he impregnates or causes, it manifests the efficient cause of the material world. Now, within that glance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are all the living entities who have remained in a dormant state within his body at the time of the cosmic dissolution. It's not that the living entities cease to exist. It's not that the living entities merge into the pradana. Someone wrote me yesterday saying, don't the living entities merge into the pradana? They don't merge into the pradana. They're within the Lord's body, as is the material cause too. The pradana actually is like it's described when the Lord breathes out, then all the universes come out of his body. The material cause comes out of his body, and then he glances at those universes. They come out like little bubbles. There are so many universes described, and I'm sure you've all heard this before, like mustard seeds within a bag of mustard seeds. And then the Lord glances at them, and when he glances at them, then they start to expand. And of course, the scientists have actually discovered that too. That, you know, they call that the Big Bang. So one thing is interesting is that previously, the scientists, previously we're talking about 200 years ago, or actually over 150 years ago, the scientists said that the material universe always exists and continues to exist. It's, in one sense, always manifest. But then, within the last, let's say, 150 or even 100 years, the scientists have actually discovered that the material world came into existence at a certain period of time. And not only that, but the material world, or this universe, which is the universe we're aware of, is expanding with ever-increasing velocity, which is kind of interesting. Because if you had a normal explosion, let's say you have a firecracker or a bomb or whatever, and you explode it, then the velocity is greater in the beginning, and then it decreases as it gets spreads out. If it actually increased, then one bomb would basically take over the whole world, if you think about it. Like if the velocity of the particles from a firecracker, let's take a firecracker, increased, then those particles would make their way all around the world very quickly. Because basically there's a conservation of energy. You know, there's a certain amount of energy that's put into the explosion. And when that energy is not lost, but when that energy is exhausted, I wouldn't say it's lost because matter and energy are interchangeable. Nothing's ever lost. But when it's exhausted, it becomes dissipated. Let's say dissipated, not lost. It's dissipated in different particles scientifically or in heat, etc. Then that's it for the explosion. But as far as the material creation, it keeps increasing the speed of the expansion. And of course, the scientists have speculated upon something called dark energy. That they don't understand. That dark energy is Krishna. How can I say that? Because everything is Krishna. Anyway, that dark energy is Krishna, who's injecting the material creation with the efficient cause, which is described here. And therefore, the material creation expands. At a certain point, the material creation will contract again at the time of the cosmic dissolution, at the end of the lifetime of Lord Brahma. So that's what the efficient cause is, and Krishna is the efficient cause. And not only that, as I mentioned before, the glance of the Lord has within it all of us, and that glance of the Lord is known as Shambhu. That's Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva is an expansion of the Lord, in one sense non-different from the Lord and also different simultaneously, like the Lord's energies. A special expansion. He's not Jiva Tattva, he's not Vishnu Tattva. He's an expansion of the Lord who carries us into the womb of the material world, or the pradana in this particular case, and injects us into this material world in much the same way as there is the pregnancy in this world where the semen is injected into the womb. So that's why in many Hindus, people in India, they worship the Shiva Linga. The Shiva Linga represents that injection of us into the material world. It's the genital of Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva consorts, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, with the regulative matrix. And he is our father. Anyway, so that's what it means by the efficient cause of the material world. Krishna is the efficient cause of the material world, manifested in many varieties. And also he maintains it as Lord Vishnu. But he's not only doing that. And he also annihilates it in his expansion as Lord Shiva. And also, another thing, another way the annihilation takes place is with Anantashesh. You know, Anantashesh actually takes part in the annihilation too. So in other words, and after the material manifestation, Krishna continues to exist. Of course, that's the first of the Chatushloka verses. Hami Vasame Vagre. Very important verses. Before the creation, there was I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. During the creation, there's I, the Supreme Personality of God. And after the creation, there's I, the Supreme Personality of God. So that's Krishna. So, that's the first point here. The second point is perhaps a little more distressful, where Prabhupada here talks about distress. I'm going to quote from here. Learned devotees accept even conditions of distress as representing the presence of the Lord. When a devotee is in distress, you know, Prabhupada I think the word distress must be mentioned here like 15, 20 times by Srila Prabhupada. So, why does a devotee see it's Krishna? First of all, the devotee sees it's Krishna because not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is omnipotent, omnipresent. Yomam Pashati Sarvatra Sarvam Chamayi Pashati. Not only does Krishna arrange everything, but he gives every living entity, Matak Smriti Ganamapo Namcha, he gives every living entity intelligence. So everything is arranged by Krishna. Of course, for a non-devotee, that arrangement is an indirect arrangement. That means if you're not Krishna conscious, if you're not chanting, then you got the law of karma, which is also Krishna's arrangement. Because Krishna sometimes arranges things just so that someone else takes care of it, or some other energy takes care of it. It's his arrangement, perfect arrangement, but he's not directly involved in that. Just like in the creation of all the living entities in the beginning of the material creation, Krishna assigns Lord Brahma to do different things, and then Lord Brahma assigns these different Prajapatis like Daksha. You know, it's not that Krishna is like personally giving birth to everybody who exists in the material world, although he is Aham Bija Pradabhita. He is the seed-giving father of everyone, but Krishna is not personally doing it. He's doing it through his energies. He's doing it through his devotees. And the law of karma is administered by the demigods, especially Yamaraj. He's administering the law of karma. So it's not, it's under Krishna's direction, yes. That's a fact. And it's all, nothing happens without the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but it's the demigods directly doing it. Whereas for a devotee, a devotee, if someone once says to the Lord, as Prabhupada said and the Acharyas say, from this day forward, I am yours, Krishna. Then for a devotee, as long as you're chanting, as long as you're following the practices of Krishna consciousness, then for a devotee, it's Krishna directly doing these things. Krishna directly. Of course, there's things that you do that are not Krishna's direct intervention, like if you make a mistake, like if you jump off a building, it's not that Krishna is responsible for you jumping off a building. As we mentioned many times, if you drive a car, fall asleep because you didn't get enough rest the last night, Prabhupada said it's not Krishna's mercy. It's your foolishness. So there's certain instances where you don't say it's Krishna. Or you get angry. I mean, sometimes I've seen devotees get angry at someone, like a husband will get angry with a wife, and the wife will say, why'd you get angry? Or, you're cruel, and the husband will say, it's Krishna made me do it. Krishna's, you know, sometimes we're so proud that we think all of our activities are directed by Krishna. But a lot of our activities, if we're conditioned souls, are directed by our own false ego and impure consciousness. I mean, we do have the defects of the conditioned soul. You know, we make mistakes, we have imperfect senses, we have a tendency to cheat, and we're an illusion. So therefore, don't think when you do something that's Krishna acting. So one has to discriminate. However, when something happens to someone that's not in their control, then the devotee should definitely understand it's Krishna directly doing it. Ananyas chinte yantamam yejanak paritas tashte. Teshan nichibiyutamam yogyakshay vahamyam Krishna says in the Gita, that for one who is dedicated to me, then I am preserving what he has and I am carrying what he lacks. And so that's what it means. You know, Krishna directly interceding in your life. And so when these distressful things happen, or when pleasant things happen, it's Krishna. And of course, that's the verse I always quote, my favorite verse in the Gita, Yomam Pashati Sarvatra Savam Chumani Pashati Tashaham Na Panashami Sachame Na Panashati, 6:30 in the Bhagavad Gita. Everyone should learn that verse. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me is never lost to me, nor am I ever lost to him. Most important verse. So therefore, Prabhupada also says, a devotee welcomes distress as a great favor of the Lord. That doesn't mean that we should put ourselves in distressful conditions and that will cleanse us of contamination. We don't embrace distress in terms of separately from Krishna. It's not that we come up with more austerities. I mean, nobody ever became Krishna conscious because they tortured the body and the super soul dwelling within. Actually, probably Krishna says in the Gita that means demoniac. Basically, if you torture the body. But in the performance of Krishna consciousness, if we accept some austerity to please Krishna, but not over austerity. Like Prabhupada said, it's important we take care of the body, which belongs to Krishna. Not hurt the body. Prabhupada was very much concerned with the health and welfare of the devotees. So there's a balance. Prabhupada also said that we shouldn't pray for more distress. One devotee asked Prabhupada, should we pray like Queen Kunti prays? She prays, Tatra Tatra Jagat Guru. That means again and again, O Lord or Guru of the universe, Apunar Dabradash Abhavadarshanam. It's a verse in the prayers of Queen Kunti. She says, again and again, send us distress. I mean, she was undergoing so much distress throughout all of her life. Her children being threatened. I mean, just like, you can't understand, unless you're a mother, how intense it is when your children's lives are being threatened. Just like recently, one of my disciples, her child got this dengue fever. Dengue is caused by a mosquito. It's in tropical countries like Fiji and also India, of course. This is the time of the year dengue comes out, actually, in the fall. When it gets real cold, the dengue mosquitoes go to sleep where they die. Anyway, so this devotee's daughter, little daughter, you know, cute little daughter, got dengue fever. And she was posting so many messages on the internet. I mean, just complete anxiety. I mean, distress, practically dying from anxiety because of the child. I mean, this is the mother's love. You can't understand that. So going back to Queen Kunti, all of her children, the five children, were continually threatened by Duryodhana and company. And so for years, not only just one time, of course, in this particular instance, on the this disciple, Gurumani, her daughter's much better now, thank God, practically completely recovered. But can you imagine that for years, being subject to that sort of intense anxiety? You know, this is the instance we've experienced with Gurumani has just been 2 or 3 days of intense anxiety. But for years, Queen Kunti was subjected to that intense anxiety. And she prayed for more. Apunar Bhavadarshana. So we won't see repeated birth and death in this material world. I mean, that's amazing. And Prabhupada said we shouldn't pray like that. We shouldn't pray for more distress because there's already enough distress in this material world. So, but distress will come. And then we should welcome it, as Prabhupada says, that in this way we're being cleansed of contamination. So that's a hard thing. It's really a hard thing to accept. And then, you know, when devotees are put in these circumstances, they often write or ask, especially if I was in contact with them, they often ask, why is it? Why did Krishna do this to me? I mean, ultimately, yes, Krishna's doing it for your own good. But as far as exactly, I mean, it's purification, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But exactly how that fits into the whole scheme of things, sometimes you don't understand for 20 years afterwards. Or you may not understand until you go back to Godhead why Krishna did that particular thing to you. But at least you can understand it's Krishna. And at least you can take it as an impetus to dive more deeply into the holy names. I mean, you have a choice. When distress comes, you have a choice. You can get angry at God. You can get bewildered. You can get depressed. You know, woe is me. Nobody's seen the troubles I've seen. You have a choice. And the choice, if we're actually seeing Krishna everywhere, the choice should be, you know, I don't understand what's happening, but I know Bhavoshada Shotra Mano Bhiramat Kautama Shloka Gunanabhada. The solution is chanting. Of course, of course, we can take some remedial measures in the material world within reason. Within reason, we take material measures. Not something that's going to be an over-endeavor. Let's say I'm getting older. It's not that I should go and get plastic surgery just so that, you know, that's definitely an over-endeavor. However, you know, I had a hernia. That's not over-endeavor to go to the hospital and get the hernia fixed up or to get cataract surgery. That's not over-endeavor. But sometimes people go to this over-endeavor, just keep this body going on when it's not really Krishna's plan. So, therefore, in any case, you understand that the chanting is what we're supposed to be taking shelter of. But you know that verse says, other than myself referring to the holy names, we don't have a friend. Of course, Krishna's our friend, I understand. But he's present in his holy name. And the devotees are also giving us the holy names. So that's our shelter. We just have to dive more deeply. I mean, that's my prescription when anyone comes and says, what should I do in this particular circumstance, and I'm distressed, other than some modicum of adjustment, which you can try, but, you know, Krishna says, Prabhupada said, even without the will of the Lord, even with the best doctor, the patient will die, and with the will of the Lord, even without a doctor, the patient will live. So ultimately, that's our recourse. When all else fails, or even when all else doesn't fail, you just chant. That's a solution. Very easy solution to material distress. So, anyway, I'm not saying that I welcome material distress. But I definitely try to see Krishna behind it, and I definitely try to chant more when there's some distress. I mean, when there's some distress, I just, especially the distress, emotional distress, you know, this, someone causes some pain or someone stimulates, doesn't cause the pain. I just take a long japa walk and just start chanting more. I don't get into the mind, you know. You can get into all these things with the mind. Why me? Isn't it? Why me? Why is he picking on me? Why is Krishna's doing this to me? I've seen so many other devotees enjoying. They have so much facility, so much ability. Why me? But then don't get into it. It's not going to help you. That's not the solution. Okay, on that happy note, all glorious to the Prabhupada, to the Prabhupada, to the Prabhupada.